Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is March 15th, 2018. I'm Senator Mia Costello. The time is 1:37. With me this afternoon is Senator Gardner. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Senator Meyer, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki, welcome.
Thank you.
And Senator Stevens, welcome.
Thank you.
So I also want to thank our recording secretary, Carrie, and our LIO operator, Ben. Appreciate your help to bring this meeting out to the public. So today we have two bills on the agenda. We will have Senate Bill 62, repealing certificate of need, and then we will continue with the Title IV rewrite, which was introduced by Senator Machicki, and that's Senate Bill 76. But first, what we're going to do is allow Senator Gardner to introduce. She has a couple special guests to introduce, and then after that, we will take a brief at ease before we hear Senate Bill 62. So, Senator Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, very much. I'm joined today by two constituents who are here with Facing Foster Care in Alaska, and they're job shadowing me this afternoon. So we've been talking a little bit about the bills that are before us today, and they also have copies of the proposed sexual harassment policy. I've asked them for comments on it, if they have time to look through that. I'd like to introduce Ricky Kanrilek. She's 16 years old, attending school at Avail High School, and she's in 11th grade, and she wants to be a writer. And I also have Vanessa Holder here. She's 19 years old, and she's a freshman at the University of Alaska Anchorage, where she's studying nursing science.
Great.
So thank you very much, Madam Chair, for letting me introduce them.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And I think later in the meeting, I will also have two special guests, and so we'll take a moment at that point, too, to introduce them. I'm going to take then a brief at ease as we get ready for Senate Bill 62. Committee. Again, we do have two bills on the agenda this afternoon, but we also have more special guests. So, Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also have two guests from the Alaskans Facing Foster Care that have been here all week, and they're shadowing me during Labor and Commerce today, and that's Zaniela McCormick and Anna Tibbetts in the front row. So, welcome to them as well.
Great. Thank you. So, with that, welcome to the guests. We had you on the floor of the Senate the other day, and it was really amazing to hear your stories and how resilient you are and what young leaders you are, and it's very impressive. So welcome to our committee. I did want to mention to the audience and those listening online, the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is the Senate's Committee on the Economy, and we're the only committee in the legislature with a Facebook page, and so welcome you to like our Facebook page. With that, we are going to hear Senate Bill 62. This is a bill introduced by Senator Wilson, and he's here. Welcome, Senator Wilson. It's a repeal certificate of need. We do have a committee substitute that is version Oscar, and I invite Vice Chair Senator Meyer to move the version before the committee as the working document.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 62, version 30-LS0502/Oscar from committee with, what am I doing? Brief at ease.
Oh, at ease. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 62, version 30-LS0502/O before the committee.
And I will go ahead and object so that we can have the explanation of the changes. And with us this afternoon is Gary Zepp, staff to Senator Wilson. Welcome. And the Labor and Commerce Committee aide, Natasha McClanahan, welcome.
Thank you.
And Natasha, if you don't mind walking through the changes in this draft.
Yeah, and
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you guys for having me here today. I'll be walking through the explanation of changes version D to O. There was a small clerical error in version J, so that's why we're going to be walking through version O today. For those watching at home and listening in, the error was page 2, line 5 of version J. It said 100 miles, and it actually now says 75 in version O. But version O allows for an exemption from the Certificate of Need program if the new construction of a healthcare facility, alteration of bed capacity, or addition of a category of health services is in a location that is over 75 miles from another healthcare facility. This is a change from 100 miles in version D to version O to 75 miles in version O. The change assists more communities that are currently struggling to attract and retain healthcare services to better provide equal access to care for all Alaskans.
Great. Thank you very much, Natasha. And I'll go ahead and remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting a version O? Senator Gardner?
Madam Chair, I just have a question about it.
Absolutely.
Well, first of all, I think I want to say that regardless of what the original intent of the bill might have been, we probably want to stop calling it repeal certificate of need and maybe call it modification of certificate of need. But I wonder where the 75 miles comes from, and I think to myself, gee, is it an hour's drive? Well, not for most people, 75 miles an hour all the way. But, what's the rationale for that specific distance?
So, Senator Gardner, thank you for the question. And I also want to mention that we have Donna Stewart, the Executive Director with the Office of Rate Review, online for questions. We have Margaret Brody with the Division of Healthcare Services, Department of Health and Social Services online. And also we have Jean Michelle with Legislative Legal. And I'll go ahead and answer that question. So when we heard the Certificate of Need bill, which the title is an act relating to the Certificate of Need program for health care facilities and providing for an effective date. So that is the complete title. Thank you for that. When we heard the bill in committee, we heard testimony from communities, especially Delta Junction, where we learned that their community was not able to successfully go through a CON process. And so we heard from individuals living in that community of the need for access to health care closer to their community. During that testimony, those members from Delta Junction mentioned that they're 100 miles away from the nearest facility where they can access health care. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they are 95 miles away from the nearest community, health care facility. So what we did is we decided that we chose 75 miles to essentially, as you mentioned, look at an hour or more, for people who are having to drive. So we also, I think we have a map that was provided to the members that show the state of Alaska and what communities would be affected. And so that's also in your packet.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll remove my objection if I'm the one remaining reading objection.
Thank you. So we have adopted version Oscar. Are there any questions of committee members for those individuals online? Senator Meyer?
Madam Chair, then I would imagine the fiscal notes will be different for this new version, and we don't have those, but we could still move the bill if that's your desire with the forthcoming fiscal notes.
Senator Meyer, we do have Margaret Brody available. Would you like to ask her to talk about the department's response to the committee substitute?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Margaret, could you talk to the fiscal impact of the bill and also the department's response to this committee substitute?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Margaret Brody. I'm the Director of Healthcare Services for the state of Alaska. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, this is going to result in a zero fiscal note because this is the work that we already do. As to the department's perspective on this, it's already what we do, so we're fine with it.
Thank you, Margaret. Senator Meyer?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. So does the department have a position on the bill as it currently reads?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, the department would support this change.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gardner.
And with the change, you'll support the bill then. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, that is correct.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions of committee members or from committee members? Okay. Mr. Zepp or Senator Wilson, are you interested in providing any comments as the sponsor of the legislation before we move it out? Okay. Senator Machicki?
Ms. Brody, are you still on the line? I'm sorry.
To the chair, Senator Machicki, yes, I am still on the line.
In what way does this change the Certificate of Need program other than it exempts a facility that's 75 miles from another healthcare facility from the CON statutes?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, Donna Stewart, who is on the line, is the one that actually runs the Certificate of Need program and can better answer that question.
Thank you, Margaret. Appreciate you being available. Donna, are you available to answer that question of Senator Machicki?
Yes, Madam Chair, this is Donna Stewart. For the record, I am the Executive Director of the Office of Rate Review, and through the Chair, Senator Machicki, the way that this bill will change the program is that at this point in time, we must review all applications that come to the department that fit the criteria of the statute. What this bill is allowing is an exemption for some of those areas, in particular those that have more than 75 mile distance between the area in which the facility would be built and an existing facility is already provided. There would be an exemption for those. So theoretically, there would be fewer applications that would be coming onto the department. Now, taking a look at what we have received for Certificate of Need applications over about the past 8 to 10 years, we have had a few small communities that have applied for Certificate of Need applications, but they have all had additional circumstances attached to them so that they would have still gone through the Certificate of Need process. Delta Junction would be the first in which it would fall under this particular requirement of 75 miles with no other facilities within that range.
Follow up.
Senator Machicki.
So my fear is the unintended consequence. What if the community of Delta Junction is able to secure the funding for a nonprofit facility in Delta Junction, and then a for-profit facility decides to compete with them next door? Does that existing healthcare facility in Delta Junction protect them, or could they start, just a hypothetical, is the second healthcare facility require a CON or not?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, you asked a very interesting question. Some of that would have to do with the timing. So if, as you had suggested, Delta Junction moves forward with a nonprofit facility, and it's going to take some time for that facility to be established. If the facility is not established and a for-profit another facility, decides that they can build their facility quicker, or they aren't necessarily concerned about how quickly, but they know that the nonprofit does not have a structure in place, and they can begin the process of building. You could have a situation in which that for-profit facility would also not need a certificate of need, and yes, they could be directly competing against each other in that situation. During the building process, the facility is not considered whole, and so then the nonprofit could be in jeopardy until they're able to get their certification that they are an active and viable hospital.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I find myself uncomfortable with this as amended, because we've heard so much testimony and so many written letters of folks objecting to the earlier version, and yet heard nothing from those hospitals that might be placated now by the changes that are here. I just would encourage anyone, like, we've got a long letter from Fairbanks Hospital saying it would be cause great danger. We've got Homer, Kodiak, Ketchikan, Fairbanks opposing the earlier bill. I just need to know for sure that they are still not in opposition with the changes that have now been made.
Thank you, Senator Stevens, for your question. I wanted to go to Jean Michelle, who's the legal drafter, and ask Jean, if you could comment also on Senator Machicki's question.
This is Jean Michelle with Legal Services. I did hear Senator Machicki's question, Senator Costello. The department would certainly be in a position of interpreting the statute and their own regulations, but the way the statute is drafted, it's the expenditure of the $1 million plus the inflation adjustment that would trigger the need for the certificate of need. So once that nonprofit spent $1 million or more, I think we're up to 1.4 now, that nonprofit would certainly have a good argument that they have vested their interest in the healthcare facility enough to meet the exception standard before the for-profit hospital comes in. And it is a question of timing, however. And even if the nonprofit came in under the exception and decided later to expand its services, they would also need a certificate of need. Or if the nonprofit beat the for-profit facility within the 75-mile radius, the for-profit facility would be required to meet the standards for the certificate of need for that area.
Thank you, Jean. That was my understanding and reading of the legislation on page 2, where it talks about where the healthcare facility is initiated. And so I appreciate getting that clarified on the record, and also the department would be drafting regulations related to the legislation. So thank you, Senator Machicki, for that question.
Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
Follow up. However, all of it is an application pending under 1807031, which the only requirement is the other more than 75 miles. If it's not a CON facility, how does it ever get CON protection, since we exempted something within 75 miles or outside of 75 miles of another healthcare facility? That's the part where I'm a little bit confused. It keeps pointing back to 031, and we just changed 031.
Jean, are you able to clarify that for the committee?
I think so. This is Jean Michelle again with Legislative Legal Services. As I understand Senator Machicki's question, he's asking about the reference to 031A, or applications pending under 1807031. But that section is not just the exception. It doesn't just provide the exception for the 75-mile radius. It also prohibits a person, from making an expenditure of $1 million or more for those three types of facilities. And so that would still apply to the facilities that have initiated construction. Did that answer your question?
We're going to take a brief at ease. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is called back to order. Are there any questions of committee members? Senator Meyer.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 62 version O as an Oscar from committee with individual committee recommendations and forthcoming revised fiscal notes.
Is there any objection to moving the bill from committee? Okay. Seeing none, the bill is moved from committee version Oscar of Senate Bill 62. And with that, we'll take a brief at ease to sign the documents and get ready for the continuation of the Title IV rewrite. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Next on our agenda is Senate Bill 76, which is the Title IV rewrite that was introduced by Senator Machicki. Senator Machicki, are you interested in making any comments before we have Anna Browley continue the presentation of the sectional? And she's actually online for us today.
Madam Chair, ready to go to work. I know we have a lot to cover, so I have I have staff that is out today, but I have absolute faith in Ms. Browley and can chime in as needed.
Great. Anna, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, so we'll go ahead and pass the baton off to you. If you wanted to continue going through the sectional with the members, and since we're taking questions as we go, I would ask that every so often perhaps you just pause and I'll look around to see if there's any questions so that I'm not interrupting you, if that might work.
Sure thing.
Okay, thanks.
Where are we starting?
Okay. Well, thank you again to the chair, Senator Costello, and to the committee for making time to hear this again today. I will briefly go through the sectional analysis again for the chapters that were presented on Tuesday. That's chapters 6, 16, 21 in Title IV and also in the sectional. And I will try to refer to page numbers as I go. And again, a lot of the larger recommendations that were made by the Title IV Review Stakeholder Group were presented on Tuesday as kind of highlights, so I'll make sure to reference which items were presented on Tuesday in the sectional. So starting on page 1 in Chapter 6, again, Chapter 6 is the powers and duties of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. Section 1 provides the director prepare a budget for administration, enforcement, education, training, and prevention activities under Title IV, with the main change being education and prevention. Section two changes or adds endorsements to the list of delegated powers, and again, that's a concept that we have not gone over today, but we'll do later. Section 3 relocates language from existing 411070, just stating that the board is the entity that issues, renews, transfers licenses. Section 4 also has endorsements. Section 5 is again related to the powers of the board. It directs the board to prepare an education plan for the audiences listed below. It also adds sections requiring the board to review the license fees in the statute every 10 years, allows the board to give opinions on pending legislation amending Title IV, requires the board to provide notice of violations to licensees once they receive notice from the courts, and also that they post FASD information online, which is something they do now in written form but not electronic.
Senator
going
Meyer?
To page 2.
Senator Meyer?
Oh, sorry.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. This puzzled me before, and I may even have asked it, but language about allowing the board to provide opinions on legislation, they can already do that, right?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Gardner, that is something that they are able to do now. It is not explicitly stated in statute right now.
Thank you.
Senator Machicki?
Madam Chair, thank you. The other boards and commissions, that's clearly stated. Mm-hmm. And this board is more of a, and we want them to not only have the opportunity to speak up, but we want it clear that there's somewhat more of an expectation for them to speak up so that they're not pressured politically not to engage in an issue.
Thank you. Imagine that.
Anna, please feel free to continue.
Thank you. So now we're on page 2 of the sectional, starting at the top. Section 6 allows information that's currently stored in the statewide database for local option orders to be kept up to 10 years, which currently is kept for one, and also purging identifying information. Section 7 adds a new subsection for the board to produce a report of that data, again, aggregated, not with identifying information, of how much alcohol is being ordered and shipped into that community or region. Section 8 adds endorsements to the board's power to create regulations, removes the board's power to create additional licenses and permits and regulation, and adds the power to restrict manufacturing, sale, distribution of products containing alcohol for consumption, so other than alcoholic beverages, which they already have jurisdiction over.
Senator Gardner?
Thank you. And in terms of saving, of collecting information with the identifying information being purged annually, is there any limit on the size of a community in which that can be done? Because there's some very small places, any information collected might track back to just one person or one household or something. Is that a concern?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Gardner. The language in the bill does not go to that level of detail, but that would certainly be a concern and should be probably addressed in regulation before the board releases that information.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. If you could continue.
Okay. So at this point, I'm going to skip over, as we said, portions of the bill that have not been introduced or read yet. And so I will ask everyone to turn to page 13, looking at Chapter 16, Regulation of Sales and Distribution.
Anna, if you could give us a moment to find that in our binders.
Yes.
Thanks. Okay. Page 13?
Page 13.
Okay. Thank you, Anna.
Okay, so now we're looking at Section 73, and in those that are following in the bill, it would be page 79 of the bill. So Section 73 amends the restrictions on hours of sale and presence on licensed premises to allow for business activities other than the service of alcohol in those prohibited hours. Section 74 defines a penalty for violating that section. Section 75 introduces an exemption for sampling endorsements and defines the week of a alcoholic beverage price of 7 days as opposed to a calendar week. Section 76 adds a penalty. Section 77 is a new section that specifies which illegal trade practices cannot be practiced by manufacturers or wholesalers and directs the board to adopt regulations defining exemptions to those rules as well as administrative penalties for violation. Then at the top of the following page, Section 78 defines a penalty for unauthorized solicitation or purchases. Section 79 prohibits online sale or purchase of alcoholic beverages in Alaska unless a licensee holds a winery direct shipment license or a package store shipping endorsement, and also defines the penalty. Section 80 adds statutory references to penalties involving sale without a license. As we discussed, there were some changes to that original section. Section 81, prohibited conduct related to drunken persons, changes the existing penalty as an administrative penalty to the licensee if an employee is convicted under that section, and adds a misdemeanor penalty for a licensee who knowingly allows employees to violate this section. And I'll note that that's a provision in existing 04-16-150, that last piece. Section 82 changes the statutory reference from one specific local option area to all local option areas consistent with 04-21-025. Section 83 maintains the current penalty for possession of ingredients for homebrew. Section 84 rewards language relating to licensed premises. licensed premises, sorry. Section 85 relocates and changes the penalty for prohibited access by a drunken person to licensed premises. Section 86 also changes the penalty for permitted consumption not allowed under a license. Section 87 has a reference to a penalty and does not change the penalty.
Madam Chair.
Going on to page 15.
Senator Machicki?
I'm sorry?
Senator Machicki?
I just wanted to remind folks what the color coding means. The yellow is existing in statute. The green is existing in regulations. The blue is a penalty or fee change, and pink is a new concept. So when we talk about relocating, when you see yellow, it's existing and just relocated in this this particular legislation.
Senator Gardner?
So to that, one, Section 83, it says, maintains current penalty for possession of ingredients for homebrew. Is it being moved into a different section? I mean, why does this appear here? If it doesn't change, it's not relocating.
It's a good question for Anna, but I think it's just moved into, if I can answer part of it, and then you may want to go to Anna. Madam
Senator Machicki?
Yes, thank you. Yes, well, that was in parentheses, so I was trying to say it quietly. and I was waiting for you to answer that, but remember that the statute is anything in yellow is currently in statute. It's been reorganized to sort of make more sense, remembering that, you know, almost 40 years of legislation that has become somewhat of a hodgepodge. So if it's yellow, it exists, but it's been relocated in the statute.
Okay, thank you.
Anna, if you'd like to continue, there are no more questions right now.
Yes, thank you. So at the top of page 15, section 88 amends a reference to another portion of the statute, again, not covered in this, but covered in licensing. Section 89 allows additional license types to have underage persons on premises as employees as long as they are not serving alcohol, ages 16 and 17. Section 90 makes the same change, but for people ages 18 to 20, and the difference being there are more rules for workers under 18 under Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Section 91 says that there can be additional license types that allow underage persons on the premises for purposes of traveling as long as they are not serving or consuming alcohol. That would include common carrier dispensaries like airlines. Section 92 defines the offense of furnishing or delivering to a minor, does not change the penalty. Section 93 changes the penalty for that same section. It maintains one C felony charge for a situation where a minor is given alcohol and then causes serious injury or damage. It removes a C felony for that same offense, but for serving a minor in a local option area, and therefore makes it the same level of offense if you're not a local option area. Section 94 changes penalties for furnishing or delivering to a minor by a licensee or their employee as an administrative penalty if the employee is convicted of a violation of this section, and again shifts the misdemeanor penalty in 04-16-150 for a licensee who knowingly allows employees to violate the section. Section 95 changes the penalty for renting a room for the purpose of providing alcoholic beverages to a person under 21. Section 96 maintains the current violation for allowing a minor to possess alcohol in their dwelling and as a fine. Going to the next page. Section 97 relocates existing language about persons under age 16 having to be accompanied by a person of age on licensed premises and have parental consent to be in a restaurant. It's being moved to another section we're not covering today. Section 98 defines the penalty for purchase by a minor of alcohol and delivery to a person under 21 of alcohol. It also adds a similar penalty to those already enacted in Senate Bill 165 in 2016, making the penalty for a minor attempting to purchase alcohol a $500 fine for a violation with an option to reduce if they participate in treatment or a community diversion panel. Section 99 just edits the title for that section. Section 100 in the same provisions as the penalty for continuing at a school event. Section 101 does some language changes to prohibition of bottle clubs and maintains the same penalty. Section 101 does not address the penalty. Section 102 does. Section 103 prohibits sale of certain alcoholic beverages and relocates the penalty. Section 104 also sets the penalty and defines exemptions or situations in which that would be exempt. On the following page.
Senator Gardner.
Sorry if I keep interrupting you. Tell me, what's a bottle club?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Gardner, my understanding of a bottle club is an unlicensed premises that basically uses a cover charge or says that they'll store your bottle of whiskey on premises and you can come and consume there. So it's setting up a scenario that looks like a bar but does not involve sale of alcohol directly. And these are currently illegal in statute.
Thank you.
Okay. Continuing on the following page, top of page 17 of the sectional. Section 105 repeals and reenacts an existing section that has to do with transport of alcohol to local option areas. It allows for delivery of alcohol to a person over the age of 21, provided it's done in person, and provided that the order was filled by a Alaska package store or winery direct shipment licensee. It requires that any carrier of alcohol be approved by the board and requires that the board review the carrier's policies and also publish a list of approved carriers. And it also defines a penalty. Section 106 sets a penalty for unauthorized storage of alcoholic beverages. Section 107 defines a penalty for sale or consumption of alcohol in a warehouse. Section 108 changes the penalty for failure to ensure compliance by a licensee on their licensed premises. Section 109 maintains the current penalty but defines it in that section. Sections 110 and 111 exempt winery direct shipment licensees from rules around primary source supply for alcoholic beverages in-state, which applies to all other in-state licensees, and maintains the current penalty for sale of alcoholic beverages from a person not licensed in the state. Sections 112 and 113 just renumber the cross-references to certain license types and then defines the, what is the current penalty for that section. Section 114 maintains the current penalty for furnishing alcohol in aid of a gambling enterprise and defines the crime in that section. Section 115, penalties for violation, adds statutory references for prohibited conduct related to drunken persons and furnishing alcoholic beverages to people under 21.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Can we go back to Section 110 and 111, exempts winery direct shipment license? Exempts from what provisions?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Senator Gardner, this particular section is part of the three-tier system, which is intended to keep a separation between businesses that manufacture, distribute, and sell alcohol to the public. So generally speaking, part of our statute says that you have to buy certain alcoholic beverages from somebody who's designated as the primary source of supply. And so the proposal is to exempt winery direct shipment licensees because they mostly would be out-of-state businesses and therefore would be manufacturing or distributing product outside the state.
Thank you.
Okay. The next section is on the top of page 18. Section 116 just adds a definition for conviction. Section 117 clarifies that licensees are subject to administrative penalties for certain sections, 416.030 and 416.052, and also adds mitigating circumstances for licensees. For example, if they have one violation of serving a minor, but they have evidence of having provided employee training consistently and not another history of violations. Sections 118 through 121, just renumbers cross-references. And then I'll pause there before we move into the next chapter.
Thank you, and we'll take a brief at ease, Anna. Back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. We are reviewing the sectional for Senate Bill 76, Senator Machicki's Title IV rewrite. And Anna, if you'd like to continue, please.
Yes, thank you. And again, we're on page 18 of the sectional, starting into chapter 21, and in the bill itself, that begins on page 97. The next section, 122, keg registration. This is a new concept in state law, but it is modeled on existing law in Anchorage and Juneau. It adds a section requiring keg registration when somebody goes to a package store and rents or purchases a keg containing alcohol. Has requirements for registration form, identification tag, and establishes penalties for violating that section.
Anna, this is Senator Costello. I have a question about that. So the person who picks up the kegs is the person who has to be the one paying for them. And what I'm thinking of is a situation like a wedding where the bride may be paying but not the one picking up the actual keg. Is that something that's contemplated in the way the language is drafted?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The language does not specifically address that situation.
So the person, the way the language is written is that the person paying for the keg has to be the person who's picking it up?
The keg, it doesn't specify that the same person who purchased is the one that has to possess it, but the penalties and the language of the statute focus on the purchaser.
Oh, okay, thank you. Go ahead and continue, Anna.
Thank you. Sections 123 and 124 just remember cross-references to license types. Section 125, and actually 125, 126, and 127, and 128 all have to do with the same section in law. The first one repeals and reenacts the section in order to list the license types that would not require alcohol server education training, and these are licenses that do not sell directly to the public, with the idea that if any new license types are created in the future, they would not be left off the list, as has happened in the past. Section 126 adds reference to permit holders who are not required to get this education course now, and also requires individuals listed on the application for the permit to be servers to have that server card. Section 127 also adds reference to permit holders and as I said, requires them to be listed and having their server card by the first event day, not the time of application. And then Section 128 sets penalties for this section. Then going to the following page, page 19, Section 129 renumbers a cross-reference to a license type. Section 130 defines the penalty for unauthorized warehousing of alcoholic beverages. Section 131 updates the list of license types that require warning signs. And again, not all license types that serve the public are included on this list now, so the intent is to include them. Section 132 includes changes related to penalties. The first one is it sets penalties for any other violation of Title IV. Currently, the quote-unquote default penalty in Title IV is a Class A misdemeanor because of a similar section like this. The bill would change and put individual penalties in each section, and then if there is a penalty for something that hasn't been defined, it would be a minor offense or a violation with a $250 fine. The next one directs the Supreme Court to set a bail schedule for Title IV violations, and then the last one prevents the court from suspending fines or sentences for minor offenses for the purpose that they can be processed more automatically rather than what happens now, which is possibly requiring a court appearance for minor offenses only. Section 133 as a statutory reference exempting violations for people under 21 of 416.060 from appearing on court view, and that's consistent with Senate Bill 165 that was passed in 2016 for minor consuming and minor unlicensed premises. Section 134 adds references to permit holders and license holders and definitions. Section 135 adds definition for endorsement. Section 136 adds additional definitions to statute for terms not currently defined in Title IV. And then I will pause there and ask the committee if they would like me to also do the section for the changes to other titles.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I have a question about data. Actually, let me think about this. I'll get to it.
Anna, could you restate your question for the committee about your next?
Yes, Madam Chair. The remainder of the sectional covers things that are outside of Title IV, but mostly relate to renumbering of statutory references. So I was asking if you would like me to go through the sectional at this time.
Anna, not that part of the bill. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I remembered my question. Section 137, you're talking about 15.15, 698, update bar definition. And so I flipped back there, and I just want to understand what that change is. And I, at a quick reading, I didn't see it. Can you sort of describe what we mean by updating bar definition?
Thank you for the chair, Senator Gardner. My general understanding of this section, and I know that it's not in Title IV, is there are several other places in state statute that reference specific license types or license premises. And so these sections generally renumber those references according to the changes in the license types. But I would need to research what the specific one was.
Okay, maybe I'll catch one of the other people in this room a little later and ask them about that. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to take a brief at ease. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. So Anna Browley just has walked us through chapters 6, 16, and 21. We do have some individuals online, probably because we've left public testimony open and we have some individuals in the room. But what I'd like to do, Anna, is you had offered to walk through those additional sections for the committee, and I was hoping then that you could actually do that.
Yes, Madam Chair, I can do that.
And feel free to point us to what section you're starting with, and then go ahead and proceed, Anna.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Starting on the bottom of page 19, section 137, and again, these are changes in other titles, as I said, primarily renumbering based on changes in this bill to Title IV. Section 137 renumbers the beverage dispensary license and updates the definition of a bar. Sections 138 through 143 amends references to Title IV for sections in Titles 9, 11, 12, and 18. Section 144 amends its reference to Chapter 0411. Section 145 definitions in 3950-200B. And this one, I do know the reference. It adds the marijuana control list to the the Marijuana Control Board to the list of state commissions or boards, and specifically this is requiring the members of that board to do the financial disclosure same as the Alcohol Beverage Control Board and many other state boards. Section 146 amends AS 4360.060, allowing for tax collection on direct wine shipments from out-of-state businesses holding the winery direct shipment license, and outlines requirements for the Department of Revenue to collect that tax. And again, this tax is one that all manufacturers and wholesalers are subject to in the state for sales of alcohol within the state, but this would establish out-of-state businesses with that license subject to this tax. Section 147 and 148 amends references to Chapter 0411 in Titles 43 and 45. And then, Madam Chair, I'll pause here because we could cover the remainder of the bill, but a lot of the remaining sections have to do with transition of license types, and so I will leave it to you if you would like me to cover that.
Thank you, Anna. I think we'll go ahead and hear from the individuals who are available for questions and also testimony who are here in the room and online. So thank you very much. But before we do that, are there any questions for Anna from the committee? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a question for Anna, but I'm not sure. Under Section 146, where you talk about tax collection on direct wine shipments from out-of-state business holding the license. So if I'm buying wine from a small winery in California, for example, will this small winery know that they need to charge a tax and then give that money to the Department of Revenue?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I believe it obviously, you know, the state law cannot regulate sales that are made, in person or on premises outside of that state. This would be specific for businesses that have signed up to have this winery direct shipment license and therefore are serving Alaska customers through online sales. And so it would be specific to that. And my understanding in general is that many states have this type of system already, and so many wineries that participate in other states are very familiar with these types of requirements and having this license.
Yes, thank you. I guess you're right. I think most states do already require that, but since we don't and haven't, will the wineries know that they need to start collecting this? I guess, how will they be notified?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Meyer. I believe they would be notified, during the application process that they would be subject to tax collection. I believe this is common on other state applications for this license type.
Senator Machicki?
Yeah, just more specifically, they're required to be licensed. So when they become licensed, they'll be notified. And we worked with the companies that do mail order internet wine sales to sort of standardize it the way they do it in most other states. So okay. Working with them specifically and directly so that we had the right system for not only their licensing but their notification.
So, Madam Chair?
Senator Meyer.
And this question may be for Senator Machicki. Is wine the only beverage then that you can order online, or can I get a bottle of whiskey from Kentucky or something?
Senator Machicki?
Yeah, other sales are not allowed over the internet. Senator Meyer.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Anna? You seeing none? Anna, thank you very much, and of course I'm sure you'll continue to be online in case we have other questions. Now I'd like to go to the public testimony portion of the committee. We did open public testimony last meeting on Senate Bill 76 version Tango, which we adopted last committee meeting. I'd like to go to Joel Katarosh with the Alaska Beer, Wine, and Spirits Wholesalers Association in Anchorage. Joel, if you could provide your name and association and then your testimony on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joel Katarosh. I'm with the Alaska Beer, Wine, and Spirits Wholesalers Association. I merely testify today in strong support of this bill. Our association strongly supports it. We think there are a number of provisions in the bill that concern us currently because they're unaddressed, that we're already familiar with in the committee. I'm sure the internet sales, unregulated e-commerce is one that is a gap which needs closing, and the unfair trade practices portion of the bill is something which Alaska, among all 50 states, is silent on. We feel, as do several of the small manufacturers and wholesalers who participated with us in the Stakeholders Committee, that these are appropriate and beneficial to the industry as a whole. So without getting more deeply into it, again, we took part in the process over several years. There was give and take, push and pull. We don't have a perfect product, but we feel it's a good product, and we strongly support its passage. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Michael Baldwin with the Alaska Mental Health Trust in Anchorage.
Yes. Good afternoon. For the record, I am Michael Baldwin at the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, the Evaluation and Planning Officer. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority strongly supports the Senate Bill 76 revising the Title IV of the Alaska Statutes regulating alcoholic beverages. We really appreciate Senator Michicki's leadership in guiding this process and the many thousands of hours and years of effort from all of those who have volunteered their time towards this effort and creating an effective collaboration and compromise reached with many stakeholders at the table. As you know and as you've heard through testimony, the Title IV has been around and not updated for probably 1980 or so, and over time, incremental updates and changing trends have reduced the effectiveness of Title IV. So that's what makes this systematic redrafting of Title IV that will help the ABC Board carry out its mission and benefit organizations and individuals whose work and community or businesses are affected by the alcoholic beverage laws and regulations. The proposed revisions are a comprehensive package of interrelated proposals and to improve the overall system of alcohol regulation in Alaska. They will make a more clear and consistent framework to be used by licensees, the ABC Board, and law enforcement. They will increase the effectiveness of Title IV enforcement by improving swiftness and proportionality and consistency of penalties, increasing licensee accountability before the ABC Board for any violations. This package ensures that the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board will fairly represent the interests of all Alaskans and promote a fair business climate and protect the public health and safety. Like many who have testified, are definitely interested in the public health aspects of this bill as well as kind of the fair business. As was mentioned previously, it may not be perfect yet, but it's a lot of hard work and leadership has brought us a package that over 100 different stakeholders that have been involved in the process are behind. So with that, thank you for your time and consideration. And
thank you very much, Michael. Are there any questions? Senator Stevens?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Could you tell us, do you only represent Alaska businesses? Would you represent those suppliers from out of state ever?
Senator Stevens.
I was thinking to Joel.
Your question is for Joel?
Yes.
Okay, well, Michael, thank you. It looks like we have no questions for you, so appreciate you providing your testimony, and feel free to provide any written testimony also. Joel, did you hear the question from Senator Stevens?
Could you repeat it, please?
Yes, thank you, Joel. Just asking if you would represent, could represent those out-of-state businesses or just in-state businesses.
Thank you, through the Chair. Senator Stevens, we represent out-of-state manufacturers as well as in-state manufacturers, but our opinions on the bill and the testimony obviously relate only to business conducted within the state of Alaska.
Okay, thank you.
We also have Erica McConnell, who's the director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. She's available in Anchorage for questions. And Senator Stevens, I was wondering if you wanted to touch again on your question earlier this week about the bill's role in giving the board education responsibilities and the scope of that.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
You want to?
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
So it looks like we've given a big responsibility to the board in education, and if I heard correctly, it was not just education of license holders of businesses that serve alcohol, but also of the general public. It seems like it's a pretty enormous responsibility to give to the board, Can the board handle that responsibility, do you believe? Or are they prepared to do that?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, this is Erica McConnell. I'm the director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. Thank you for the question. As I spoke briefly on Tuesday to a question from Senator Michicki, it's my understanding of the intent of this provision that while the board will collaborate with other agencies and organizations that provide alcohol education, that the focus of the efforts of the staff in the office would be education regarding Title IV and the licensing and enforcement provisions in the title. We did add a local government specialist position to the office about a year and a half ago, and that person is solely focused on doing education and outreach, although it's both for alcohol and marijuana. But my understanding, and perhaps Senator Michicki could elaborate, but my understanding is that the discussions in the steering committee would be that the ABC board, while responsible then for adding additional education on the website and collaborating with these other agencies, that the efforts of the agency would be primarily related to Title IV education.
Well, thank Senator you. Stevens? Actually, if I could follow up, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just referring to a slide we had, number six, that said the ABC board would be the lead agency in alcohol education. That seems like a big job.
Chair Senator Stevens, yes, a comprehensive plan to educate a lot of constituents on the responsible use of alcoholic beverages and on relevant state statutes, regulations, and policies. That is a big job.
Erica, this is Senator Costello. Is there a fiscal impact then? I mean, it seems that, you know, we see a lot of education efforts come through the legislature and even something, I mean, this seems like quite an expansive, you know, it expands your role. And I think that Senator Stevens is envisioning, you know, public education campaigns. And I know Dale Fox is here in the audience, and he spoke Tuesday about this also. You know, what is your – how do you interpret this role as far as how it's written in the bill currently?
Madam Chair, there is a fiscal impact, and I'm available to walk you through our fiscal note at any time that you would like us to do that. Specific to the education and outreach, we have put in the fiscal note both travel costs and printing, design, and publication costs for educational materials for our local government specialist. There would also be, especially with the regulations process that would come out of this bill, there would be potentially extra days of board meetings within the first couple of years. So we have attempted to add, to note that there would be a fiscal impact to this and to kind of ramp ourselves up to be prepared to take on this responsibility.
Thank you. I'll just look to the committee and see if you're interested, any members are interested in having Erica explain the fiscal impact related to this specific question. Senator Gardner?
Do we have the fiscal note?
Yes.
Senator Gardner, if you look at the front of your
a lot of stuff.
Binder, I think there is a title page, but we could take a brief at ease while we look for that. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. We are in the process of reviewing Senate Bill 76, Senator Michicki's Title IV rewrite. And Erica, what we're going to do is hold off on giving you an opportunity to walk us through that part of the fiscal note, but we will, before the end of today's meeting, we will have that before members. So we'll continue on with some other members who are online, and then we'll get back to you on that. And Senator Michicki wanted to add something also.
Yes, just something must be clarified for the record. This bill does not require, we have many partners that do outreach. This bill simply requires that the board develop a comprehensive plan. Not that the board is out in the classrooms, that the board is actually delivering It requires that the board bring, through collaboration, all those agencies that you all sitting at this table already fund to assist or to actually deliver. So some of it will be delivered in after-school programs. Some of it will be delivered with materials that the board publishes on the website. But if in your vision that they're walking around talking to people under 21-year-old in schools, we already have people that do that. So this bill requires that they develop a comprehensive plan, not that they deliver the actual education.
Thank you, Senator Michiki.
Madam Chair, if I could just follow up on that.
Senator Meyer, excuse me, Stevens.
That's the second time. I appreciate your comments, Senator Michiki. I guess I'm just a little uncomfortable making the ABC board the lead agency. That says something different than what I'm hearing. And if that's not quite true, then that's fine. But to be the lead agency means to me that there's an enormous responsibility that if it's not funded, it's not going to happen.
Madam Chair.
Senator Michiki.
If you can please change to, so whatever you see on the slide, we work with statute. So if you can turn to slide 2 on the actual bill.
Page 2.
Page 2, section 5, line 23. It says the board shall develop a comprehensive plan to educate public safety professionals, the alcohol beverage industry, individuals under 21 of age, local governments, established villages, and the general public on the responsible use of alcoholic beverages and on relevant state statutes, regulations, and policies. The board shall update and revise the plan annually. It does not specify that the board delivers the education. But we do feel that it is important to have a central clearinghouse of the materials that people like Recover Alaska and other groups that we already have in place will deliver to the public.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. Next, I will come back to the room here in Juneau and invite Allison Koulis with the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, who's here and would like to testify. Welcome, Allison.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Allison Koulis, and I am the Executive Director of the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse and the Alaska Mental Health Board, which our boards are the state agencies that are charged statutorily with advising the governor, the legislature, and all of the departments for the planning and coordinating of behavioral health services funded by the state of Alaska. The boards are in full support of Senate Bill 76, which provides the much-needed update to the Title IV provisions. This bill is a result of a six-year stakeholder effort to improve how alcohol is regulated in Alaska to improve the health and safety of Alaskans. The recommendations in this bill have been vetted by over 100 members of the alcohol industry, public health, public safety, local governments, and other stakeholders who use Title IV on a daily basis and who understand that many parts of the law needed to be updated, improved, and clarified. I personally sat on the licensing subcommittee as one of the public health representatives, and I was grateful for the process, which really helped me understand more of what the industry perspective was, the challenges of the current Title IV, and what they were willing to compromise on so that public health and safety could be protected while allowing for a fair business environment. The proposed regulatory structure is consistent for license types and increases fees to support the necessary enforcement. We want to keep serious punishments for serious crimes while reducing penalties for minor violations or business compliance issues, and give the ABC board consistent information about these violations, which will then ensure that businesses are operating fairly. This bill further protects youth by taking several steps to limit youth access to alcohol, incentivizing youth who need it to seek alcohol education and treatment, promoting responsible alcohol use, and reducing the harms of overconsumption. Our boards are in full support of SB 76 because we believe it will fix current issues in Title IV, clearly define the business practices, and create clarity on agreements by all sides for a safer built environment for all Alaskans across the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of Allison? Senator Michiki?
Board members are very interested in the education piece. Can you talk about what your board's, what your role will be in once the board, ABC board, creates a comprehensive plan? What kind of outreach does your board do to assist with the delivery of that education?
Yeah, thank you. Senator Majicki, through the chair, our boards are really the convening. We understand kind of what each agency's role is, and then really ensure that the work is done effectively and efficiently throughout Alaska, and really hitting the hard parts to make sure that we're using our dollars effectively. And so I really see our board supporting the work of what the ABC board is doing, what Recover Alaska is doing, what the Department of Behavioral Health is currently doing, and other nonprofits. And so really, we would be a part of those conversations to make sure that those public education campaigns are happening in the Department of Behavioral Health or with Recover Alaska, and the ABC board is really doing that effective education of the business licenses. So really making sure that that is working. Additionally, we work with the Mental Health Trust and really kind of identifying any other questions or concerns of where we can supplement the work that's not able to be happening at within the ABC board or the Department of Behavioral Health or Division of Behavioral Health.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate being here. So next, I'd like to invite Trevor Storrs with the Alaska Children's Trust. Thank you, Trevor.
For the record, I'm Trevor Storrs, the Executive Director of the Alaska Children's Trust and a member of the Recover Alaska Steering Committee. The Alaska Children's Trust is in support of SB 76 related to the components addressing underage drinking. Alaska Children's Trust is the statewide lead organization focused on the well-being of our children, family, and youth. All children should be safe and healthy, a value we all share. Alcohol plays a major role in many of the social, behavioral, and physical issues our communities are addressing every day, including child abuse and neglect. Prevention is a key tool we can utilize to help address current trends. One of the components of prevention is to minimize alcohol consumption with our youth. Research shows when consumption is reduced in our youth, consumption and negative impacts later in life are also reduced. SB 76 does three core items related to underage drinking: requiring the keg registration, consistent but fair penalties for underage drinking will ensure youth are not punished for the rest of their lives for one mistake, and it builds resiliency versus adding on more trauma. Licensee liability for selling to minors will hold licensees immediately accountable for what happens on their premises and gives them opportunity to correct the issue well before the ABC board reviews their license for renewal. All steps that help keep our youth protected. SB 76 has been a collective process that has included individuals from multiple sectors, including government, nonprofits, and the alcohol industry. This collaborative approach truly builds and helps ensure a strong and fair bill. Thank you for this opportunity.
Trevor, thank you very much for providing specifics on why you like the bill. We've heard a lot about the process and people enjoying that process, but it's very helpful as we review this that you've provided those specifics, so I want to thank you for that. Are there any questions of Trevor? Okay, seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
So we also have Dale Fox, who's here in the room. Welcome again, Dale, who's here for questions. Are there any questions of Dale since he's here? Okay, seeing none. Also, since we've been given the fiscal note now, I think we'll go back to Erica McConnell. I think you were going to walk us through the fiscal note. This is OMB component number 3119 related to the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Erica?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and we do have a copy now in front of us.
Thank you. You'd like me to address the whole fiscal note, not just the educational component.
Actually, let me look to the members of the committee. Senator Stevens, you were the one asking the questions about education. Are you interested in the whole fiscal note, or perhaps just the sections?
Well, both, but I did. I mean, this is still a comprehensive plan. It's updated annual. I just want to make sure that it's funded in the fiscal note, and I don't see that directly. Or maybe I misunderstand what the intention of the board is really to do in terms of a comprehensive plan.
Erica, why don't you walk us through the entire fiscal note, and then as we look at that, perhaps you can comment on any education pieces that come up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Erica McConnell, Director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. I would like to start with the changes in revenues before I talk about the changes in expenditures. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about how we calculated the changes in revenues. And I'm sure we'll talk more, or that you will talk more about this when Anna goes through the section that relates to license types, and that's where the license fees are. But some of the license fees for types of licenses are increased, and some of them remain the same. But what we did is we took a snapshot in time, which was about a week ago, where we calculated the number of licenses of each type that we have and what their current license fee is and what their estimated new license fee would be under this bill. And we made an estimate in endorsements. Anna will explain to you at a later committee meeting this new concept of endorsements, and there is a fee with an endorsement. And we calculated that we would gain approximately $500,000 more in revenue per year. Remember that the license fees are for a two-year licensing period. The licensees have to renew every 2 years. So we took the increase that we anticipated, and we split it in half, and came up with about $500,000 additional per year starting in 2020, because I understand that the committee substitute proposes to change the effective date to start in 2020. The first year, 2020, does look higher than the outlying years. You'll see that for 2021, 22, 23, and 24, we anticipate $510,000 in revenue, but for 2020, we anticipate $567,000 in revenue. And the reason for that is, and again, I apologize, I'm getting a little bit ahead of the information that Anna has provided you so far, but right now, when you have a beverage dispensary license, if you have multiple rooms with fixed bars, you get what's called a beverage dispensary duplicate license for the other fixed bars that you have in other rooms of your facility. And that duplicate license has to pay the exact same license fees as the original beverage dispensary license under the current statute. This is proposed to be changed in SB 76 to where a duplicate license will disappear and instead it'll be a fixed bar endorsement. And there is a one-time $1,250 fee for that endorsement, and then every time you renew that every 2 years, the fee is $200. So at the time that we shift from our current statute to the new Title IV under SB 76, we would get that one-time $1,250 fee for every situation in which we currently have a duplicate license, but then after that, we would never get that original fee again. So that is why we're anticipating $57,000 more in 2020 than we would be seeing in the outlying years. So that's the changes in revenue. For our anticipated operating expenses, we divided it into we identified six major issues in which we would need to have expenditure authority. I'm sorry, five. So the first one would be a regulations project that would be necessitated by the passage of this bill. We would basically need to redo our entire regulations, and we anticipate that we would be able to complete that regulations project by January 1st, 2020. But we do not currently have staff capacity to manage such an extensive regulations project, so we are requesting a two-year long-term non-permanent position, which would be similar, either exactly or similar to a regulations specialist position, which is a range 16, to be brought on for 2 years to manage this regulations process. There would be necessary services and supplies associated with that position, and we would be adding some additional days of board meetings so that the board could consider the regulations, take public testimony on the regulations, and basically complete a good publicly, a project that had a lot of good public participation and deliberation by the board. So we would be anticipating 4 additional days of meetings over part of FY19 and then part of FY20 before the bill became effective and the regulations would need to be adopted. That's the first topic. And the second topic would be the project and the additional meetings for the board. The third thing would be the educational outreach responsibility. So as I mentioned earlier, we do have an existing local government specialist 4 on staff, and we have budgeted through this fiscal note for this staff member to take a 2-day trip to each of our 4 judicial districts in the state every year for the first 3 years. And that comes out to $6,400 a year for the first 3 years. And we do anticipate that there will be a big kind of launching for this education program, but that after the first 3 years, that education would become such a normal part of our business, of our, normal responsibilities, that we would just wrap it into our normal operations. So there is a travel budget for this local government specialist for the first 3 years, and also printing, design, and publication costs of $10,000 a year for the first 3 years. So that shows up in the travel in FY19, FY20, and FY21, and also the services in FY19 and FY20. The next thing would be the last major issue that we anticipate from this bill would be a replacement of our alcohol licensing database. The software that we currently have is very limited, and we would be unable to meet the data collection, research, and reporting requirements that are in this bill. So we are budgeting $500,000 for the purchase of a new licensing database system, which we would spread over the first 2 years, so FY19 and FY20, and then anticipating a maintenance fee of $50,000 a year in the outlying years. So that's also dealt with in the services line of the fiscal note. As you will see, starting in FY20, we certainly show that the increased revenues that we would that we anticipate from the passage of this bill would more than cover the increased expenditures for 2020 to 2024. In 2019, we do feel that there are two reasons why we would not need to request any additional money for implementation of this bill. One is that we do, on average, return $280,000 to the general fund. We've done that on average over the last 5 years, every year, so there is some ability to expend that. And then the ABC board recently approved a regulations project which increased the application fees for new applications, transfer applications, and renewal applications. That regulations project will become effective on July 1st of this year, 2018, so it will start for fiscal year of 2019, and we anticipate an increase of $175,000 in revenues from that those changes in regulations. So we anticipate sufficient receipts to support the expenditures that we anticipate from the passage of this bill.
Thank you, Erica.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah,
appreciate that.
Your questions.
I appreciate you going through the fiscal note. Certainly the Finance Committee will be delving into that also, but are there any questions of committee members? Okay. Senator Stevens? Let's see, we also have in the room Nancy Mead with the Alaska Court System. Are there any questions of Nancy? Okay. I actually do have a question for you, Nancy, if you don't mind coming forward. Thank you. And just so members know what I'm looking at, it's in your packet. It's the proposed changes to the penalties for the Title IV offenses. And Nancy, thank you for being here. I appreciate it. I guess my first question is there's the bill addresses the changes to penalties, and I was wondering if you were interested in commenting on it or talking to the committee about perhaps the scope of these changes. And also I noticed in the table it talks about some changes were made in a previous bill in a previous legislative session. They were portions that were taken out of the complete title rewrite and passed first as sort of a priority legislation related to minor offenses. And I was wondering if you could talk about how that intention that the legislature had, whether or not that's been carried through, or the impact of us making those changes. So I know that's quite a lot, but perhaps I'm just asking you to comment on this section.
Madam Chairman, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. And I think you're asking me generally to comment on the violations and the penalty changes that are
Yes.
displayed in this in the materials that were in the packet. Yes, to the court system, this is the most important aspect of the bill. We are neutral on the bill and don't have a view at all about the policies involved with the alcoholic beverage licensing, et cetera. But the penalties are, of course, something that the court is deals with on a daily basis. And I would point out that the bill has the court system create a bail schedule. I think it's Section 132 that talks about fines and the bail forfeiture schedule. And as I read that, new 04-21074, that requires the Supreme Court to take all the things in this chart that are now violations, minor offenses, and do something with them. And what we will do with them is it's a substantial project to create bail schedules. We do that whenever the legislature tells the court to do so. And what it is your determination that you want all those violations to be not only charged on a ticket, a citation by law enforcement, but to be resolvable without a mandatory court appearance. And that can only happen for people if the court puts it on a bail schedule. So you go ahead and tell us to do that, and we follow through. As I say, that's a project. As I was looking at this bill and deciding any impacts, fiscal or otherwise, I see there would be 63 violations by my count that we would be putting on a bail schedule. And so that means that folks, well, it'll be me in implementing the bill over the months, and I do appreciate that there's plenty of time to do that, ensures that everything is cited appropriately. We keep an electronic table that we then have to communicate to all law enforcement so that when they use their handheld ticketing device, the appropriate codes are made. When we create these new 63 codes, we will have meetings with the Department of Law and others to ensure that we've summarized them appropriately and that everyone agrees that this is how it should be handled. So that's a project that administrators within the court system sort of puts together, working with others, and then we present to the Supreme Court to sign, and it becomes enacted into a court rule. And we can do that and will, and we can actually do it without fiscal impact. So the court system, even though it's additional work, we won't need to hire somebody to do it. We can, that's our job. And so it's a big job, but that is something that we are prepared to do. And at the same time, there's another table for all crimes, different from the minor offense table that the court maintains. And so all of that computing, those tables and electronic databases will have to be cleaned up when a crime is changed from one category to another. And we do that. We did it after SB 91. We've done it after other laws changed things to violations. And I hope I addressed that appropriately, but you had another question about some former legislation.
Well, I do, but also, we have a lot of people talking about that the process to bring this bill before the legislature was collaborative, but we haven't had anyone actually specifically give us the details on what is the philosophy then that you see behind these changes that the bill makes.
To the chair, I was involved in some of the meetings. As I say, the court doesn't have an interest in many licensing issues. We did have a big interest in the minor consuming alcohol piece, which had been, which is not in this bill because it was previously dealt with in a prior legislature in SB 165, as you know. And so those were the meetings, when that was on the agenda, those are the meetings that I participated in. And the thinking there was that I guess two or threefold, and you know because you passed the legislation, is that youth who are caught drinking were charged with this semi-criminal offense previously. It was kind of its own beast. It wasn't criminal, and it wasn't a violation. It was in the middle. We had whole separate procedures for minor consuming cases, and that it was not helpful to kids to be charged with something that was more criminal than perhaps it needed to be. And the because it was a complicated thing to charge this criminal matter, the thinking was that police weren't charging it in an even-handed way or consistently, and that by lowering it to a violation, which is what SB 165 did, it would result in kind of easier enforcement or easier for law enforcement to write the ticket, and the young person, the minor, could either just pay it. That one has a mandatory court appearance, so they do have to show up and see a judge. But they can pay it, plead guilty right there. And the thinking that was that that would go better, that there would be more enforcement because it would be an easier procedure. And probably what you're referring to is for whatever reason, the number of cases for minor consuming after that legislation has been lower than the number before the legislation. And I never know why the data says what it says, but a couple people have asked for the data, so I have it, and I know that it might not have panned out exactly how people thought. I mean, it could be that minors are drinking less, and therefore that's why there are fewer charges. We just don't know why, but the charges did go down after that, and that might be different from what people would have expected from the discussions that I heard during that meeting. Now, second part of SB 165 had the court remove all those cases from or not post those cases on court view going forward, and we don't post those cases. I have no data or evidence about the impacts of that. And this bill, SB 76, would extend that to one more violation, and we can easily accomplish that fact.
Thank you, Nancy, and I would be interested in having that data because I do remember that we passed that bill, and the idea would be that there would be some consequence, but it wouldn't be life-altering for a mistake. And so it would be, if you don't have that with you right now, the difference in the numbers either by percentage or percentage drop or total number, I think that would be something we'd be interested in seeing.
To the chair, I can supply that.
Okay, thank you. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And since we have you here, and since we're talking about the proposed change on penalties, I noticed there are there's at least one penalty that actually goes up under this Title IV. And I was wondering if you believe that there's enough savings elsewhere, that going from a misdemeanor A, I think it is, to felony C for aggravated penalties involving under 21 and by sex offenders.
Do you have the statute for that one, which is?
Yep, it's 416.059. And it says it increases penalties for anyone who is registered sex offender or child kidnapper. And hopefully there's not too many of those, but.
Through the chair, Senator Beyer, I guess I'm not completely familiar with why that change was made. I did not think that was changed in the bill, but I'm probably reading it wrong. So I could go back and look at that, and we'll get back to you. I'm sorry about that.
No problem. And I'm just going off the attachment here. I didn't look in the bill itself. I'm assuming it's in the bill. But also, I would doubt that there's many cases, at least I hope not, that are involved child kidnappers and sex offenders. But I think whenever you go from misdemeanor A to felony C, I think it does cost something. But like you said, you're saving money elsewhere, so it may be an offset.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I think this bill neither saves nor costs us money. The court doesn't experience any fiscal impact when one or two cases moves from a misdemeanor to a felony. And even indeed when the legislature reclassifies something from a felony to misdemeanor, we don't save money because, again, there's nothing that we even if something goes a little bit faster, it doesn't there's no monetary savings. There's nothing that we didn't expend because of that. If that's clear, I'm not sure.
I think so. It's been a while since I've been on the Judiciary Committee, but I always thought it costs the court system more if somebody was charged with a felony versus a misdemeanor.
And through the chair, Senator Meyer, I think I would classify that as theoretical savings. It takes more time, but we absorb it, and there isn't any outlay of money that doesn't occur when that happens. So therefore, there isn't any actual fiscal impact. There's a little bit less work. I mean, it would be like if the legislature had 300 bills one session instead of 400. You wouldn't literally save money. You'd have a little less work, and that might be a comparable way to look at it.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And before we wrap up the committee meeting, I want to thank Nancy for being here and those members online. I do want to mention that Ellen Ganley, who's the co-chair of Title IV Review Steering Committee, has been online listening in Fairbanks. And unfortunately, Ellen, we don't have time to ask if there's questions for you, but if members do have questions, please feel free to send them to the committee aide, or we will be hearing this bill next week also. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. What was the agency that Ellen Ganley represents?
She was the co-chair of the Title IV Review Steering Committee.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. Appreciate it. And we'll go ahead and end the meeting with my opportunity to introduce my special guests, who are young Alaskans with Facing Foster Care in Alaska. And if you can go ahead and stand, Rachel Bedsworth and Natalia Edwards. Rachel is the statewide representative for Facing Foster Care in Alaska and has spent 12 years in foster care, having moved 47 times. So. She's a social work student at the University of Alaska Anchorage. So welcome. And also we are here, we've been joined by Natalia Edwards. She's been in 11 foster homes and is now also going to UAA. We had other members of the committee introduce foster care, you know, youth. And I want to say that it's really inspiring to see you a part of the legislative process and advocates for foster care youth in Alaska. And we certainly have some bills before us this session. And I also wanted to invite members to a lunch and learn tomorrow at noon, where we will learn more about foster care youth in Alaska. And so let's go ahead and give them a round of applause. thank you very much for being here, and I'm excited to have you shadow me for a little while this afternoon. So with that, I wanted to mention to the committee we are having a meeting Monday at 6 p.m. here in this room, the 19th, and then also our regularly scheduled meeting at 1:30 on Tuesday and Thursday. And we will be sending out the schedule before 4 o'clock. So with that, the meeting's adjourned.